It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
The world is going to get saved. How's it going to get saved? Well, the big bad guys are going to save us. And Charles Goyette was talking in Houston at a Mises function there. And I was listening to the speech. I got about halfway through it. And it was, you know, the one thing that was, I want to get this before I forget. The one thing in there, go ahead and get his mic. The one thing in there, you're talking about Larry Summers being the nephew of somebody.
Oh, that's so good.
Okay, well, nephew of who?
We tell them what's on the cut? What the magazine is first? Or the
Yeah. Go.
Okay, so in 1999, Time Magazine. These people never get it. They come out with a magazine February 15th of 1999. So think about that. I mean, that's exactly 12 years ago. They come out. The cover of Time Magazine is called "The Committee to Save the World," and I just took it out there for a little, you know, a little visual prompt to show the people. And the Committee to Save the World. And on the cover of the Committee to Save the World, Time Magazine, February 15th, 1999, is Larry Summers. What's that guy's name? Robert Rubin and
Greenspan.
Alan Greenspan. So Larry Summers is a former president of Harvard. He was Treasury Secretary in the Clinton years and just left the Obama administration. Robert Rubin was co-chairman of Goldman Sachs and Treasury Secretary in the Clinton administration, and has caused a lot more destruction elsewhere that he's gone. And then and there's the maestro himself, Alan Greenspan. So Time Magazine purports these people to be the Committee to Save the World. So I brought this magazine out and I said, I just want to tell you about the destruction that all of these people have wreaked on America. But the one about, and I'd like to talk about each of them,
please,
if I could. But I want to get the one you
ours
you
your,
mentioned.
Man.
Huh?
Is ours
it,
your.
It is? Okay, call us now. No, there is an economist who has sucked the lifeblood out of the study of economics for two generations of American university students. I mean, this guy's been bad news. This guy's been an admirer of Soviet-style central planning and production, and, you know, helped share the line, oh, they're overtaking us, they have a superior system, and, you know, just and been involved in taking economics out of the study of how human beings act to improve their lot and so on and so forth, just human action that people are players in this, into, you know, lumping us all together into, you know, in statistical entities in which the individual doesn't matter, you know, but it's the aggregates and so on. And they've corrupted, in my view, the study of economics for two or three generations. These are Keynesian statist madmen. And there's an economist at MIT. I don't even know if Samuelson's alive anymore. But he has had the definitive college and university textbook on economics for at least two generations. And his name is Paul Samuelson, okay? Had a terrible influence on Americans' understanding of economics, furthering all this Keynesian nonsense that has dug us into the hole that we're in now, and the glorification of the state. Okay, that now you know who Paul Samuelson
okay,
is.
Okay, but define the Keynesian. See, the only way that I can get, you know, to understand, make people understand, is Keynesian is like everybody, there's a dial for something. There's numbers that they think they can, you know, micro and macro manage the economy. So explain Keynesian in a kind of a paragraph.
Well, just to finish your point, Keynesianism, you know, is the idea in part that, you know, the economy is a machine that can be managed by these geniuses, and they can turn the dials and twist the levers and push the knobs. But John Maynard Keynes was a British economist, and his sole meaningful achievement, in my view, is he persuaded the politicians. He gave them an intellectual rationale for what they wanted to do anyway. And what did they want to do anyway? They wanted to spend money, whether they had it or not, to buy themselves re-election. They wanted to do all kinds of grandiose things, and with the responsibility of a two-year-old who has not yet been toilet trained. They just wanted to do, and they doo-dooed all over the economy. So this is Keynesianism, and I guess Keynes is thought of primarily as having been the guy that says, you know, when the economy turns down, when you go into a period of recession or depression, the solution to that period is for the government to spend a whole bunch of money and create new demand for goods and services and for employment and so on. And if the government will do that, well, that will get us out of our mess. Well, this has been disproven. I mean, it simply hasn't worked.
Yeah, but period. The second part was you're supposed to pay it off later or something.
Yeah,
right?
Well, that's part of the hidden thing is, yeah, in the good times, you know, you run a surplus. In the bad times, you run a deficit and you deficit spend. Well, the whole thing, all it was a pretext for politicians to spend money and be irresponsible. So they loved him. They didn't really understand about, you know, his general theory and, you know, aggregate demand and stuff. All they knew is now they had, you know, they had a respectable British economist that said they could spend and do whatever they wanted. So that's John Maynard Keynes, and he is literally the intellectual cover for the economists that have gotten us into the mess that we're in now. Today is the day, as Henry Hazlitt said, that all the bad economists told us all along not to worry about. You know, so that's John Maynard Keynes. Oh, in fact, there's a famous quote of John Maynard Keynes that actually was in a different context. But somebody said, well, what happens in the long run if we do this? And he goes, well, in the long run, we're all dead. You know, so anyway, so that's Keynes. So one of his champions in the United States infected the minds of young mush-minded university students in America for years and the whole intellectual, academic, economic profession. Until lately, and there's kind of a revolution going on now, fortunately, but that's John Maynard Keynes. So all I was saying about Larry Summers, I said, you know, I could do a whole seminar on each one of these guys and spend the whole weekend on the destruction that they have wreaked. Robert Rubin, oh my gosh. But the one thing that people don't know about Larry Summers, former Treasury Secretary, is that he is the nephew of Paul Samuelson, and he went to MIT and studied where Paul Samuelson was, and now he's a famed economist and so on. So it's just a little, you know, one of the cross currents of life that he's the nephew of Paul Samuelson.
Well, wasn't Summers part of this derivative thing in the back? Didn't he push that?
Look, yeah.
And everything else. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I mean, they're all cut from the same cloth, you know.
Well, what do you think the message was when they were doing this Time Magazine saving the world thing? Because that's part of a campaign.
Well, Time Magazine is, I know they've been on the employ of the CIA in the past. Look, Time Magazine is the towel boy of the political establishment. They serve the political establishment. You think they serve their readers, their advertisers? No, they serve Washington. They serve power. And so they always celebrate, you know, it doesn't matter who's in power, whoever's in power, you know, they celebrate power and they further the centralization of power by celebrating power. And, oh, look at these powerful people and what gods, veritable gods they are that walk among us. And they're the committee to save the world. Well, each one of these guys has proven to be a buffoon. You know, each one of these guys is proven to be, you know, a little like Godzilla. You know, they thrashed about with the public's money and the power of the Treasury and the administration and so on. They thrashed about and, you know, they're big and strong and powerful like Godzilla, but they have a brain the size of a pea. You know, so they smash everything in their way and they leave a trail of destruction behind them. And then you hope that they, you know, sink into oblivion in the ocean.
I want to segue into what's going on around the world. Mm-hmm. Okay. And this is a good way of doing it. My point is this: it has wreaked havoc on the planet, and it's starting to manifest itself in people going, hell no, all over the Middle East right now. Well, what's happening in Egypt and around the world is not just located just there. It's part of a larger thing. You want one world government? Well, I give you one world revolution, and that's what's going on now. So we have central banking or Israel or some kind of controls of whatever that's coming from where? Well, when you got tear gas canisters, say, made in the USA on it, yeah. You got WikiLeaks cables coming out saying, All this stuff you've been suspecting, that the United States government and the central banking or whoever has been controlling all your governments and you don't get to have a say, when that gets confirmed, then what? People are taken to the streets. We'll see the ramifications of all this control and central planning on the planet. We come back with Charles Goyette in just a little bit.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to the Clear Your Independence. I got to wipe my juice off. Yeah. Keep me healthy. Well, kind of, you know. I feel a lot better. We're going to do a show on that here soon. We're moved up the Greenway and a little acreage up there. We're going to be planting some goodies. And we're going to be documenting it, too. Everybody needs to get ready because here it comes. That's why I have Charles Goyette in, author of The Dollar Meltdown. He's got another book coming out, too. He's got a deadline a few months here. We'll talk about that a little bit. But Charles and I have been doing radio for a long time, and for years we did it together. I was his producer for a time, and Charles was great at articulating.
Those were happy days, happy man. Days.
And you know, and it was interesting because we knew, and we were the same philosophy. It was the first time you probably had a hardcore libertarian producer. We're charting the path, and I tell you, we were on liberal radio, Air America Radio. So you can imagine hardcore libertarians, token libertarians on the Air America progressive kind of, you know, affiliate, and one of the most popular affiliates they had in the whole country. Uh-huh. And what happened was we were educating the progressives. Well, it became very, very popular because you speak the truth, they learn from it. And here in Phoenix, the left and the right, that's why it always comes out of Arizona, because of the education. This is what I want to talk about.
But,
now.
You know, some of the fun part of it was the behind-the-scenes fun that Ernie and I had were things like that. We were actually talking about this on the phone the other day because of Barack Obama's State of the Union address. You know, Ernie goes, did you watch? I go, no. I go, do you watch it? He goes, no. But when we worked together, we used to draw straws, you know, because you'd never get anything. You know, you can pick up the paper in the next morning and read the first paragraph and know exactly what he said. You never get anything. You know, it's all packages. It's all speech writers. It's all teleprompters, you know. It's just
I had Brad Freeman. On Friday.
But we used to draw straws, and the loser had to watch the State of the Union and get some audio cuts.
Yeah, do the cuts. And everything. I had Brad Freeman on. He was all mad. He was progressive. He was mad that I didn't watch it. And he goes, why? I go, because I knew he was going to lie. And he goes, well, how do you know if you didn't watch it? I go, did he say things are okay and going to get better? That he's a liar. You know. Now this is what I want to talk about. Everything that Charles was sharing with the audience back then was a, you know, ABCs of exactly what was going to happen. Why? How? Who is going to do it? Well, it's coming to pass. I want to talk about Egypt for a little bit. Egypt is just a manifestation of a lot of something. Because this is, they try and make it, MSNBC, CBS, CNN, ABC, NBC, Fox News, they all, we can't have a void in leadership. We got to have somebody to deal with. You know, we got Clinton out there wrapping arms and legs around Bart Baradei, or whoever his name is. I don't even care. Because the people there are going, no, this isn't about any religion, or it's about we don't need them. And it is a manifestation of something. I want Charles to weigh in on this. Help me out, man.
Yeah. Well, one thing is, you know, I don't mind saying in advance, these things can end well and they can end very, very badly, too. But they have to happen. I mean, the things have to happen. These old things can't go on. And when their time is ripe, they fall to the earth and rot. And that's the case with Hosni Mubarak. It can't last. The people want him gone. They don't seem to like, they're like Americans in many ways. They're not clear about what the source of their problems are and why they're in the problems they're in, you know, and there are people with many different opinions, different points of view coming together. But the one thing they all agree on is that the tyrant has to go. And so the tyrant has to go, but This is part of an economic syndrome of our times. And, you know, Americans first became aware that there was, it's been going on for a while, but Americans first became aware when that kleptocrat Ben Ali fled Tunisia. But you remember the news stories before that about food riots in places like Tunisia and elsewhere. These people are caught between a rock and a hard place in the modern economy. Prices of commodities, raw materials, foodstuffs, agrarian products are going up all over the world. Why? Because of money printing. Look, nobody cares. Does anybody listening to this show right now even know what the Tunisian currency is? No. I know it's the dinar. So what? They're all called the dinar in that region. It's the dinar. Nobody cares. When that kleptocrat Ben Ali fled, do you think he took a boatload of the Tunisian currency with him?
No.
Hell no.
No.
He took a ton and a half of gold. He took $50 million worth of gold with him when he fled the country. Because, you know, nobody cares about these. But the currencies that are still valuable and in use, widespread commerce around the world, are things like the Japanese yen and the U.S. dollar and the euro. Well, here's the story. The United States is printing money. Everybody understands that. The European Central Bank is printing money. The International Monetary Fund is printing money. It's fiat money. China is printing money. Japan is printing money. So all the currencies that are used for commerce all over the world are printing money, and the price of commodities in particular, because people notice at first you can live without copper for a couple of months, but you can't live without food. So people notice the price of food going up, and people on subsistence incomes can't afford the new higher prices. So you have food riots breaking out around the world because of American inflation and inflation by Europeans and others. So that was the first shoe that fell in Tunisia, and then they wanted to get rid of the rotten kleptocrat, especially, you know, in WikiLeaks they find out what a scoundrel he is, and, you know, that he is a kleptocrat and he's been robbing. Here's a country where the people are rioting because they can't afford food, and you find out how much the royal family is keeping and how many Ferraris and Maseratis they have garaged on the royal palaces. So the people tossed him out. Well, the same thing's going on in Egypt. You know, they have had, I mean, you tell me what it would be like in your household if prices over the last couple of years had gone up 50%. The price of gasoline, 50%. The price of your groceries up 50%. It'd be the incredible shrinking grocery bag. That's what's been going on in Egypt. I'd say over the last 3 years, the prices of things that people buy to live on, like shaving cream and food and other things in Egypt, are up about 50% over the last 3 years, thanks to the money center countries printing money. And they can't afford it. And so this is a manifestation of long simmering hatred of the autocrats in power. But it's brought to a head. The fuse is lit by economic conditions that have become intolerable. And Mubarak knows it. And the first thing Mubarak said, you know, when the people started taking to the streets, is we're going to hold down the prices of goods. We're going to help subsidize the price of goods. Well, how do they do it?
By not having them on the shelves.
Yeah, that's right. So, I mean, this is the collapse. This is the same thing I started off talking about here in America, too. This is what Henry Hazlitt said. Today is the day that the bad economists told us, don't ever worry about that, comes in the great by and by. Well, it's here. And of course, it shows up first in places like Egypt and Tunisia. But, you know, it's going to show up in the rest of the world as well. You know, what's it going to be like in America when all of a sudden you realize at the grocery store that you can't make the household budget work? You got 10% or 17% or 21% unemployment, so maybe half the income you had in the household, and you can't afford food. What's going to happen in the United States? So these are just the early warning signs of a monetary system that has been corrupted by Keynesians, by Paul Samuelson, by Keynesians, by Robert Rubin, by Alan Greenspan, by Ben Bernanke, by statists of every hue and stripe around the world. These are the early signs. The chickens, as they say, are coming home to roost.
Championed by the lamestream media. Yeah, yesterday I had a conversation with the Phoenix police, and we're just like, look, can we work on some kind of rules of engagement when, you know, the people take to the streets here? Well, I don't know if we certainly don't want it to be a public meeting. I go, what if I just had the meeting, invited you, and you didn't show up? I don't know. We're going to find out what's what. We'll talk about more when we come back.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here on the LRN.FM network and around the country on some affiliates that you know, make sure that I know I can't cuss online anymore, you know, on the air. That'd be bad. You know, I was a naughty boy. I'll be good. Now, the thing that I want to make sure that we get in this segment is that here in America, you know, this is not just an Egyptian or Middle East problem. It's a world problem. And it's, you know, who led, who did the chicken, egg, kind of whatever. And I, you know, central the philosophy of what Charles has been talking about. It's just this mindset that you can or should try even to control independent transactions between individuals voluntarily, not bothering anybody. I mean, the fact that you even think you can or should is just where we get these problems. Now, here in the United States, we have coming up this month, CPAC. Big thing. Oh, we got to get all the Ron Paul people to go, oh, we're going to make sure Ron Paul wins that thing, and then maybe he'll run and fix it. And I'm going, yeah? And what do we find out? CPAC, this organization, is going to be honoring Donald Rumsfeld as a defender of the Constitution. Done. They're already going to say he won. He's going to get awarded at this thing. And we're going to, and we care what the heck these people say. I'm, why the hell are we even going? I don't even get it. So now it's, this whole thing is coming home. People are going to be in the streets one way or another, armed or unarmed, peaceful or not. We're not trying to keep this Lovolution thing going, but I need to know what Charles thinks is coming now. And where are we at in the dollar meltdown? You know, as you know, anticipate, we were afraid you weren't going to get it out in time.
Oh,
you know, you got it out.
Yeah.
You know, you got another book coming. We'll talk about that a little bit. But in Dollar Meltdown, I mean, you know, how meltdown are we?
Well, you should read the Dollar Meltdown because the things I've described in there are all coming to pass. You know, now you're the next thing you'll probably see meaningful. I mean, you're seeing the price of petroleum go up. You've seen the price of gold and silver go up. You see the I mean, if you'd read the book, you would have understood the reason for the food riots, the raw materials prices and agricultural prices going up. And the next thing you'll see, and the signs are already evident of a real bond market collapse, and eventually you're going to have a bond market collapse. I mean, why should people, you know, continue to hold bonds that are payable in dollars that are just printed? Oh, yeah, I'm going to lend you money. Here, I'm going to lend you all my money. How will you pay me back? Oh, I'm going to print up some fresh paper money and pay you back. You mean you're going to take my valuable money that can be used to purchase real goods and services today, and then you're going to print a bunch of paper money that won't buy anything and pay me back with it? So the bond market is going to collapse. These are things I've walked you through in the dollar meltdown, and you should actually read it. So let me tell you where we are today, because this whole calamity rides on two rails. It rides on the fiscal rail. That's, you know, the fiscal policy of the country. That's, you know, Congress and its spending and taxes and the president and his spending and so on. So all of, you know, the Washington spending and taxation, that's the fiscal side. And the other side is the monetary policy, the monetary rail, which is the Federal Reserve and their money printing and so on. So just so you can kind of gauge this thing as it unfolds, when John Boehner was hoping to win the House of Representatives just back in the fall, he came out with the is like the contract with America that you remember so well from Newt Gingrich in 1994. You know, you elect us and we'll do these things. So Boehner tried to recapture that magic, and he said, here's our pledge to America. He said, if you will elect us, give us the House, we will cut $100 billion in spending in the first year. And I looked at that and I laughed, Ernie, because I know it's a big deal. So there's a Treasury webpage you can go to, and I bookmarked it. He came out with that announcement, like, I think it was September 23rd. It was in the newspaper. So I go to the Treasury website that shows you the visible portion of the debt to the penny every day, to the penny. It's a Treasury. It's not some other guy's website. It's the Treasury's official website of the debt. And I bookmarked it. And I said, okay, let's see how long goes by before the debt has grown by $100 billion. Because after all, they say, you know, hey, entrust us to run your government, and we're going to cut spending by $100 billion. Well, let's see how long it takes for $100 billion to be added to the national debt. It took 1 week. They came out on September 23rd. By September 30th, the debt had grown by $100 billion. So, you know, we're going to elect them. This is what they're going to do. Well, it's not serious. So then the Heritage Foundation, before the election, the Heritage Foundation says, well, here's our plan. If you implement our plan over the next few years, you can cut $346 billion. And you look at that, and they don't touch a penny of the American empire. You know, bases in 1,200 or something countries, you know, God knows how many people in uniform around the world. They don't touch any of that because, you know, they're subsidized by defense contractors and they've got a sweet deal. So anyway, you look at this and there's nothing serious about cutting the debt. Last week, the administration came out with the projections, the Treasury Department came out with the projections of what the current fiscal year, that in September 30th, fiscal 2011, what the visible, just not the hidden debt, you know, all the promises they make to pay for stuff, but the visible debts on the books is going to be for the current fiscal year. It's going to be $1.5 trillion. Now, Rand Paul came out last week with the most serious effort of any of these guys to cut stuff. Okay, it's the most serious, and he, you know, cuts everything, cuts foreign aid, cuts this, but all of his cuts together are $500 billion. Okay, wait a minute, hold the phone. The most serious, you know, like good luck getting any of that through. The most serious proposal to cut spending is $500 billion.
Well, we had a month.
Well, yeah, we've got $1.5 trillion in the deficit this year. So if you were to get all of those cuts through, the deficit would still be $1 trillion flipping. So and of course, the answer to all of these problems is if they had abided by the Constitution and, you know, the 10th Amendment. You were at that 10th Amendment gathering the other day. I went down there. If they'd abided by those things, we wouldn't be in this problem to begin with. But so the Congress says, the new Congress comes in January, and they says, here's what we're going to do. We're going to read the Constitution. So they read the Constitution, and I know there are a lot of people, maybe even people listening to your show right now, that think that's good, you know, put the spotlight on the Constitution. It hurt me badly. I mean, it wounded me that they could get away with this kind of a stunt, and it reminded me, Ernie, of the admonishment Christians should know about the hypocrites that loved to be seen of men praying in the streets, and they were admonished to go close the door and pray quietly in their closets. And it's the same with these guys. So they made this big thing about, well, now we're show you our dedication. We're going to read the Constitution. What do you mean you're going to read the Constitution? You've sworn to, you know, you have guys that have been in Congress for 30 years. They swore an oath to uphold it, you know, 15 times every 2 years. They're going to read it. They're going to read it in public. So they read it in public, and 15 minutes after they got through reading it in public, they went back to, you know, planning their other unconstitutional activities that they're involved in. You know, one congressman, John Lewis, comes out a few days later, somebody stuck a microphone in his face and said, what's the constitutional empowerment or authorization for Obamacare? And he goes, well, the pursuit of happiness clause.
Oh,
yeah. Now, wait a minute. He's been in Congress 25 years. That means he's taken the oath of office to support the Constitution 12 times. And he doesn't know that there is no pursuit of happiness clause.
It's whatever they say it is.
Of course it is. So that's the hope that you're going to put on the fiscal side. These people are going to get a handle on the spending. Then on the monetary side, you're talking about the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve has doubled down on their destruction. Before the first round of destruction even got assimilated, before the first round, they created all of this money bailing out the banksters. They took all of the mystery meat that these private banking institutions had on their books that were worthless, and they relieved them of it, and they paid them to take this stuff, and they put it on the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve. And, you know, the U.S. dollar will be depreciated accordingly to offset the worthlessness of all of these things that they took off the private profit-seeking money center banks. You know, when they made money over the years, they didn't send you a dividend check. They paid themselves billions in bonuses and fees and dazzled us with their financial fancy footwork all these years. But now when they take a loss, they shuffle their losses onto the books of the Federal Reserve, and the Federal Reserve is only too happy. Well, before that first round of quantitative easing, $1.7 trillion altogether, before that has even worked its way into the system in the form of higher prices at the gas station, the grocery store, and so on, they doubled down with QE2. So we've got just a nightmare of runaway money creation and money printing, and the prognosis is very, very grim.
And both sides are cheering it. We got Rachel Maddow on MSNBC when Rand Paul talked about eliminating foreign aid. Can't do that. We got to keep funding Egypt.
Yeah.
You know,
Hosni Mubarak.
Yeah, we're so screwed. We'll be right back.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
Fight for here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com here in Phoenix, Arizona. You know, We have a lot of things that not only Charles has been saying, I've been saying, but a lot of our guests that we had to try and share information with you have been saying. And one thing they were talking about is they were saying, you know, gold, good. You know, and now it went down from 14 down to 13 something. And they go, oh, it went down. I'm going, is it still above 13?
You thank your lucky stars when it dips, man. You are so lucky to get that break. Look, you ought to read the Dollar Meltdown because I described for you how all,
New York Times best-selling Dollar Meltdown translated into Chinese and Korean.
Ernie, come on, man. I got to tell you this. Somebody sent me a review of the Dollar Meltdown in Indonesia, in the principal language of Indonesian. Well, I don't read Indonesian. I don't know anybody that does, but I flipped on the Google Translator.
How many languages do you in?
And here is just the last paragraph of the guy's review. Okay, now it's Google Translator, but, you know, they do the best they can. Well, I thought it was, he writes, or the translator says that he wrote, would you want to ride a train called the Dollar Debt Express to a place called the crack-up boom? I don't think so. And I thought, that's about the best review of my book that I've ever seen. That pretty much
knows what the crack-up boom is.
Yeah, I mean, that pretty much covers it all. But I do get asked a lot about gold, and I cover all of this stuff in the book. I walk you through it, how you can protect yourself from, you know, rapacious dealers, and how you can protect yourself from all of these sorts of investments, you know, from getting leverage that will eat you up, or maybe you're right about the long-term trends that we're talking about, but you're wrong about what happens by Monday morning, and you get wiped out. So I walk through all of those things to protect you from that. But I would like to say something about gold because of the downturn, the profit-taking that we're seeing right now, because everywhere I go, people ask me, is gold in a bubble? Is gold in a bubble? And I think I can put it in these terms. China is now the world's largest producer of gold. China encourages its people to own gold. China, has an aging demographic that they want to make sure they don't go into their retirement like Americans and baby boomers who are counting on Social Security goes into their retirement with no resources. They want their people to own gold.
Take care of your own retirement. Buy gold.
And they are very, very clear that they want to beef up their foreign exchange reserves in gold. Not in dollars, but they want to lighten up in dollars, but they want to beef up substantially the gold that they have. Okay, that's China. India is now the world's largest buyer of gold. Somebody in the World Gold Council put out a report the other day that said something to the effect of the demand out of India is insatiable. Somebody that's involved in that trade that I cited the other day said, you know, it's as though price is no object. They want gold. They are the world's largest buyer of gold. Now, just to give you a point of comparison, what can happen to this market? India's gold reserves are 8.2% of its foreign exchange reserves are in gold. 8.2. That's not very much, but it's more than a lot of countries.
Yeah, it's more than anybody else I know.
8.2%. China, the world's largest gold producer, and very serious about getting a lot more on their balance sheet, is only 1.7. So I've got the calculation for you. If China goes up on its just on its foreign exchange holdings, its reserves, to the same level, 8.2%, that India has, they would have to buy all of the world's gold production, all of the new mining of gold from all over the world for the next 2 years, all of it. Now, you know that the dollar reserve standard is breaking down. Americans are going to have to do something at some point to have some other currency. If Americans, just think about it, 305 or 8 million Americans, whatever we have today, if Americans just bought 1 ounce of gold per person, just one, in the face of, you know, the dollar reserve standard failing, if they bought just 1 ounce of gold per person, it would take all of the world's new gold mining production, 100% of it, for the next 4 years. So between these two events, we have 6 years of the world's future gold production would get consumed by just these two very likely events. It gives you an idea of just how thin.
Okay, now does that apply to silver also?
Yeah, actually, the case for silver is extraordinarily bullish because for many, many years now, silver has been priced as a industrial commodity. You know, they buy it for contacts for your smartphone, and they buy it for, you know, they use a little bit of it in your CDs and the, you know, electronic keyboard of your computer and so on. So it's been industrial applications that have been driving the silver market for many years. It's only in the last 3 or 4 months that the world is starting to realize, oh, monetary metal. Just like gold, it's a monetary metal. The world is barely aware of it. The move from like 15 or 18 bucks to 30 was recognition of the monetary capabilities of the silver market. Just a glimmering awakening. By the time the world awakens to that, silver can just go, I mean, it's just explode.
Now, see, this is one thing that I want you to address. When you're talking about exploding, we're talking 30 to what? I mean, you know, a lot of people, I don't think they really comprehend how stupid this is going to get.
Yeah, it can get really stupid, but it's a measurement of really how low the paper money goes. It's not how high gold goes. And once the people quit thinking of it in terms of, you know, how much I'm paying for gold, how many dollars, you start thinking in terms of how many ounces of gold do I have? How many ounces of silver do I have? Because it's going to become a standard unit of accounting, like a yardstick is a standard unit of measuring the length of things in feet and inches. Gold and silver will become standard units of accounting because the standard unit of accounting that the world uses now, OPEC, when they sell oil, the standard unit of accounting for agricultural products around the world is the U.S. dollar. But it's like a yardstick of shrinking length. It's 36 inches 20 years ago, and then it's 34. Today it's 28 inches. Next week it's going to be 22 inches. It's not a dependable unit of accounting. The dollar isn't, because the Fed's out there printing up more and more and more of them at virtually no cost. So you need to start thinking of gold as the standard unit of accounting instead of what the dollar price of it is, or silver instead of what the dollar price of it is. You know, think of it in terms that we've talked about many times about, you know, how what's the relationship of a gallon of gas to an ounce of silver? What's the relationship of a basket full of bread and sandwich meat to an ounce of silver?
Now, I want to ask you this, though. You know, someone I respect a great deal that makes gazillions of dollars on being able to analyze the market, I go, look, man, the dollar's going to zero. You know, and he goes, yeah, it is going to zero, but it never gets to zero.
Yeah.
So his whole thing is, yeah, you're going to be using dollars to be able to do whatever the heck it is. And as long as it's still there, now you don't mind if I, you know, make some money and convert it to gold. I mean, you know, all right, cool. So, I mean, do you see the dollar ever really going away?
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, that's what Mises meant, the great economist Ludwig von Mises, when he talked about the crack-up boom. They have destroyed now about, since the Federal Reserve was created almost 100 years ago, they've destroyed about 97% of the dollar's purchasing power. So the dollar's worth 3 cents. You know, if you had what you could buy for 3 cents in 1913, you know, it cost you a dollar today. They've destroyed 97% of the dollar's purchasing power over those years. So, okay, so it's worth 3 cents on a 1913 basis, and people still use it. You know, it takes, it used to be able to get a candy bar for 3 cents in 1913. It takes you a dollar to get the same candy bar today. So can it go to zero? Yeah. Here's what happens. At some point, so it can go to 2 cents, and it can go to 1 cent, and it can go to half a cent. And, you know, you can go, I remember when I was a young student in Italy, I took a picture in the shoe store window because there were shoes, and they were priced at, you know, like 456,000 lira. And I laughed at the size of the currency units, you know. But, I mean, that can happen in America, and we can still have dollars, and you go buy a Coca-Cola, and it's 620 bucks. Yeah, I mean, you know, it can continue to last. But Mises talks about the crack-up boom, the sudden realization by everybody that it's not like a freeze in Florida and the prices of oranges goes up. It's suddenly the currency itself is becoming useless. What have you got that I could spend it on and get rid of this currency? You got a garden rake? I'll take it. You got a broken fax machine? I'll buy it. Anything to get rid of the paper money. That's the crack-up boom. And when that happens, it's useless thereafter.
Useless. Well, I'll tell you what's coming up. WalletVoting.com has a lot of information. I encourage you to go check out the videos there and so on, and we're preparing for what's next. What's next is anything but U.S. dollars. Get out of anything denominated in the U.S. dollar. Go to something that has value. Gold and silver doesn't suck. Zeitgeist, we're going to get to answer some of my questions, finally. Maybe, probably, hopefully. from those guys. Thanks to Charles Goyette, The Dollar Meltdown. New York Times bestseller, several languages. You need to know what he shared. Go to Amazon, The Dollar Meltdown.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured.